everybody! Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 184 for November 22nd. Chance Watson bringing you the news today. This episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Happy that you're listening. Hope you guys are enjoying it. If you guys are listening for the first time, please remember to subscribe to us on whatever music app that you're listening in on so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And if you're at the end and you're like, hey, I really liked what I heard, please leave a nice review. We appreciate that. It gets us more noticed and gets us more advertisers and then helps us keep the show going. So definitely appreciate it all around. Hope you guys are getting ready for Thanksgiving. I think I've said many times on the show before, of the three major mainstream holidays toward the end of the year, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, I'd probably say that Thanksgiving is the lowest of the three. On that list, it's only personal preference. I know a lot of people that absolutely love Thanksgiving. They go absolutely ham for it, no pun intended. But no, not really my thing. I think growing up, my dad and I had a tradition of going out hunting. We'd go out for rifle season, go deer or elk hunting, growing up. So that was pretty much all we did, for Thanksgiving. It felt like it was a good day to go out, as most people were, inside stuffing their bellies and, watching some football. So that was always our go-to plan. Speaking of shooting, I just saw, or hunting rather, just saw that, the Forest Service is doing some work on the, on my shooting range up in, not mine. I don't own it. It's not mine, everybody. The shooting range, well, shooting spot, rather, I guess you could say. There's an area up near Hayden Lake that people go shoot. Pretty popular area. Being worked on right now. God, it threw back memories. I've thrown down a lot of rounds at that place. Definitely locals understand. Most locals who shoot in this area know what I'm talking about. Pretty good area. But for those who are looking to sight in some rifles or just throw some rounds downrange, remember that it's currently under construction. Well, more remediation work, making sure that the hillside doesn't jump into Hayden Creek. So remember, if you're looking to go shoot, probably go find another spot for right now. Other than that, that was just a PSA announcement, everybody. I don't know where that came from. That's jumping all over the place. Like I usually, classic Chance, jumping all over the place. He never stays on topic for more than a few seconds. Oh well, you know, I gotta stay on brand. It wouldn't be me if I wasn't jumping from topic to topic. But going back to Thanksgiving, hope you guys are getting ready for a great holiday. The next time I hear or you guys hear from me will be on Friday. Hoping to get a good interview, but we'll see. Gotta lock that down real quick before I start talking about it. Hope you guys liked last week's interview, with Idaho Fish and Game. Those guys are just awesome. Bringing them on to talk a little bit about what's going on in the outdoors. Also working on a nice entertainment interview for you guys. Another musical guest. This one might be a little bit out of, not what we've normally had on, so it might be fun to shake things up a little bit. But yeah, hope you guys are ready for the holidays. I certainly am. I know that a lot of people celebrate Black Friday just as much as Thanksgiving. That can be definitely, it could definitely be fun. I don't think we have as much of violence at department stores as we used to anymore, with online shopping becoming such a big thing. But it still happens from time to time. People still want those deals, so they'll go get up at O'Dark 30 and get ready to throw on their brass knuckles and start getting ready to fight somebody to grab a blunder that's half off or something. Sometimes it's just those videos that you can see, like where people just like barge into stores. God, those are really, really good. I think the last thing I wanted to talk about today, I read an article recently. James Cameron was talking about Avatar 2. I don't know if you guys are familiar. When I talk about Avatar, I'm not talking about The Last Airbender, which, I mean, great cartoon. Bad movie. Horrible movie. Worst movie ever made. Not sure where M. Night Shyamalan was. I don't see the twist there. It was just bad. just bad all the way. No, Avatar 2 coming out, a sequel to the critically acclaimed and blockbuster hit Avatar. And he was talking about how it just doesn't make sense for the company because it costs so much money to make it, that it would have to be like the third or fourth highest grossing film of all time to even break even, which, I mean, hey, he did it once. Not every sequel is bad. I think there are, I don't know. I think this is all based on personal preference. I would say probably most sequels do not live up to an original if the original is good. I think probably my best example would be like Boondock Saints. Boondock Saints 2 is fine, but it's not Boondock Saints 1. But there are exceptions to the rule. Godfather 2. Godfather 2, many people argue, is better than the first one. Certainly better than the third. While I think the third gets a lot of hate, unnecessary hate, it's definitely... Two is probably the best. So yeah, hey, sometimes the sequels don't always suck, and maybe, hey, you know, the first one accomplished so much, maybe it just rides that star power, and it just continues to do really well. I personally saw Avatar 1, and the visuals were really cool, but when you're basically borrowing the storyline of Dances with Wolves and putting it in space, I didn't think it was that really original. It didn't feel like we were breaking much ground on the sense of, hey, this is a crazy thought. I don't know where you guys came up with this. Yeah, we did come up with it. It was released in the 90s. It was called Dances with Wolves. It was a great film. It's a great film. but James Cameron always raising the bar for moviegoers and whatnot. Also find myself looking forward to Wednesdays now. Andor, the show, and the Star Wars Andor on Disney Plus has been absolutely just, I'm so excited for it every time it comes out. Bear in mind, it definitely slow. First couple episodes is definitely slow. But if you stick with it, you get invested. And I think what it comes down to is it's just not a Star Wars show for kids. And I don't mean that in like a mature way. Like there's not a lot of violence, too much violence anyway. Nothing too graphic. It's just, it's more cerebral. It's definitely a thinker. It's not spontaneous lightsaber duels every, you know, 5 minutes to keep the reader, the user's engagement going. It's definitely a thought one, but it also builds the world of Star Wars. And so if you're interested in that, I would definitely recommend Andor, or even if you haven't, you know, I think sure a lot of people watched Rogue One, which I thought was one of the better, newer movies of Star Wars. And, we all know how well, ooh, spoiler alert. Ooh, do I want to hit that? Has it been enough time to where I can reveal what happens at the end of Andor? No, I probably shouldn't. But anyway, you kind of get an idea of, how Andor might end. So, in any case, great show. I am looking forward to that. Nothing really else on my watch list radar. I haven't, since I powered through the Lindsay Lohan Christmas movie, I really haven't. I guess I've needed to recoup or something. it wasn't that bad. It just was just eye-rollingly cliche, if that makes any sense out there. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is. All right, before we go into our quarterly and post-false press headlines, I just want to wish everybody once again a happy Thanksgiving. I hope you guys have a great holiday. And, hey, if you're driving to relatives or, you know, on a plane or something like that, kick on the old North Idaho Now podcast. It'll be good background noise for when you're on a plane or making that long car drive to go see the relatives or whatever the case may be. We're there for you. We're there to help out in the situation. Hope you guys have a great holiday. And all right, without further ado, let's jump into some news. The family-owned English Funeral Chapel in Post Falls in Coeur d'Alene has been serving the local community for over 80 years. Their compassionate team and licensed funeral professionals know that each service is as unique as the person or family planning it. They can accommodate your needs with skill and flexibility, create unique and meaningful ways to help you honor the life of your loved one, and help you through one of life's most challenging times with dignity and respect. English Funeral Chapel is now offering Aquamation, also called water cremation. Aquamation is a gentle, eco-friendly alternative to flame cremation. Just like with traditional cremation, water cremation is a method of final disposition that reduces the body to essential elements, which are then returned to the family. However, no flames are used during the water cremation process, making it a more natural choice. Originally developed by the Mayo Clinic, this revolutionary process is now available to the general public through the English Funeral Chapel. For more information, call 1-208-773-3425 for the Post Falls location or 1-208-664-3143 for the Coeur d'Alene location. You can also visit their website at www.englishfuneralchapel.com. All right, everybody, takes us into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines for Saturday, November 19th. Headline, A Great Blessing. This is by Bill Bewley. With a family of seven, including four grandchildren, Teresa Richardson said the turkey she received Friday was a godsend. Quote, I'm speechless, she said as she sat in a car outside Unity Center for Spiritual Growth on a 25-degree morning. It's a blessing. Combined with the $25 gift card she received to Super One Foods, Richardson said they will be able to enjoy a Thanksgiving dinner. Quote, we wouldn't have it without them, she said. The nonprofit Turkeys and More gave out 1,812 to 14-pound turkeys Friday to provide for a Thanksgiving meal for vulnerable families. More than 1,000 were delivered by volunteers to food banks and other organizations around Kootenai County, while about 700 picked up turkeys along with the gift cards at the Unity Center on 15th Street. Evelyn Adams, Turkeys and More vice president, has coordinated the event for 6 years. Its theme is Fight Hunger, Feed Hope. Quote, we feel when things are so tough financially and people are kind of down, if they know people in the community care enough to do this for them, it gives them a little hope. It gives them a boost, she said. Turkeys and More set a fundraising goal of $60,000 to feed an estimated 8,000 people. It came up about $8,000 short, so it's still accepting donations. The core group was key in Friday morning deliveries, and North Idaho College wrestlers and others helped with managing traffic flow and placing turkeys in mostly older vehicles that passed through the pickup site. Turkeys and More President Bill Griffiths was pleased so many volunteers were involved and that they were able to help thousands have a nice Thanksgiving. Quote, that's such a wonderful, warm feeling to provide family unity, and a shared loving meal, he said. NIC wrestler Travis Waldner was glad to do what he could do. When one woman explained that she had a big family and asked for a larger turkey, Waldner went looking and found one. You're sweet, the woman said. Waldner smiled. It's nice to do some good deeds, he said as she drove away. Shelley Binning said it will brighten Thanksgiving, quote, being on a fixed income right now, this is a great blessing to me and my family, she said. Fantastic. I love how so many people in our community come together to make sure that those who just can't afford a Thanksgiving meal come together and make that happen just solely out of the kindness of their hearts. It's a great thing. Awesome thing. Moving on, Epic Showdown. This by Devin Weeks. Music blared from the sound system. Sweat dripped from their headbands. At the blow of a whistle, the showdown began. Post Falls Parks and Recreation 14th Annual Wild Turkey Dodgeball Tournament proved to be an epic battle Friday night as sneakers squeaked and dodgeballs pounded walls, floors, and bodies in the Mullen Trail Elementary School gym. First-timers and returning champs kept the intensity cranked to 11 as they pummeled their opponents and danced around colorful projectiles. Quote, I won this in 2015 and I played again in 2016, CJ Crenton said between taking swigs off his water bottle. Now I am much more out of shape. I get that. I totally understand. Maximilian Knoll of Coeur d'Alene has played in the tournament for several years and carries on a family tradition. Quote, it's truly a blast, said Knoll, who played on the Knoll Over team. Quote, my father, he started this 5 years ago. We used to do it as a family, but my parents moved. The dodgeball tournament provided an evening for adults to reminisce about playing the game as children. 9 teams of amateur dodgeball enthusiasts each played 4 games, with winners facing off through the final rounds as others fell out of favor. The players vied for a $100 gift card to Embers by the Green, oof, love Embers by the Green, a pumpkin pie and an apple pie. The best-dressed team earned a $50 gift card to Embers by the Green and bragging rights for extreme awesomeness. Love that. Quote, we've been We've got a lot of teams that have been doing it the last four times, possibly even further back, said tournament coordinator Carter Cassidy of Post Falls Parks and Recreation. It's definitely a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite events to put on. Well, I can't imagine. It's got to be the best. Tournament winners and results are expected to be announced in the press early next week. Well, that's super cool, guys. Who doesn't love dodgeball? And remember, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. God, they need to make a sequel to that movie. Such a good movie. Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge. So good. All right, moving on. Sunday, November 20th, headlines. Tackling growth together. This is by Kay Thornbrew. There's no silver bullet to fix the issues of growth and housing that face Kootenai County residents. Quote, there's not one thing, Coeur d'Alene City Council member and affordable housing advocate Kiki Miller told a crowd this week. Quote, there's a bunch of different things we have to try to develop. Around 40 people gathered Thursday night at the Harding Family Center in Coeur d'Alene to hear a forum discussion focused on the role of cities, counties, and builders presented by DART, that's D-A-R-T acronym, a nonpartisan group. Miller said a survey of around 3,700 Kootenai County residents revealed that their top priority related to growth is preserving open spaces on the prairie, followed by school capacity and traffic concerns. City and county planning are key to addressing those concerns. Quote, planned growth is almost always more desirable and a lot less costly than unplanned growth, said Dave Callahan, Kootenai County Development Director. One way that cities and counties ensure that their growth plans don't overlap is through defining areas of impact, the geographic areas where cities are expected to grow and eventually annex. In Kootenai County, some areas of impact are 20 years old. For that reason, Callahan said the areas of impact ought to be reconsidered. He said he's also interested in exploring how the comprehensive plans for the county and cities can be made more consistent. Alan Dykes of the North Idaho Building Contractors Association gave a builder's perspective on growth. Even developers want to see reasonable growth, he said. Quote, growth for growth's sake isn't good, he said. If we're just going as fast as we can and we're not responsible, then we're going to outstrip the resources. The median income for a family in Kootenai County in 2021 was about $65,500 per year. A recent search of property listings showed that only 74 properties countywide were affordable for a family in that bracket. All but nine were manufactured homes on leased land. Those numbers highlight the importance of increasing the housing supply, particularly for workers. Representatives from the county, as well as the cities of Coeur d'Alene, Hayden, Post Falls, and Rathdrum, recently convened to explore possible solutions at a multi-jurisdictional workshop. The workshop was presented by the Regional Housing and Growth Issues Partnership, a task force tackling growth and affordable housing. One option to increase the supply of affordable workforce housing are land lease programs, in which a company buys property, builds housing, and then leases the homes to employees and provides them on a rent-to-own basis. In fact, a development intended for healthcare workers is expected to break ground in the spring of 2023. Miller said many developers are willing to come to the table and discuss workforce housing solutions with certain incentives. At the joint planning workshop, North Idaho Building Contractors Association presented a number of considerations that area developers and builders would like in exchange for attempts to provide workforce housing. The requests include fast-tracking permits, consideration of pre-approved designs, increased density and expansion of approval on building types, such as micro condos and tiny home blocks. Those who attend the workshop overwhelmingly indicated that the event should be held multiple times per year. That makes sense. Miller said the feedback was heartening, as well as the high participation from the county and its cities. Well, it's a very important issue. A lot of people feel strongly about it, so not surprised on that participation. Moving on, attitude of gratitude. This is by Devin Weeks. Nearly 300 pounds of turkey, 600 servings of mashed potatoes, 800 servings of gravy, 390 servings of dressing, and 260 servings of sweet potatoes. All this scrumptious food and more was served up with smiles Saturday during the community Thanksgiving meal at the American Legion Post 143 in Post Falls. Quote, this is a super treat for me. I don't cook, said David Gertie of Coeur d'Alene. This is really nice. Kitchen manager Corky Thomas stepped out of the kitchen for a moment to see a packed dining room filled with happy chatter. She and her crew began prepping for the meal on Thursday. Quote, this is fantastic, Thomas said. It's wonderful. We're just so happy the community comes out. We get to support all year from the community. This is our way to say thank you. About 450 community members, including veterans from different areas, many who served in Korea and Vietnam, in their military ball caps, gathered at the Legion to enjoy the free Thanksgiving meal. At one point, the banquet room was so full that additional seating was made available in the conference room to be sure everyone had a seat. Legion volunteers included members of the Whistle Stop 4-H Club, who helped bus tables and deliver drinks to guests. Post Commander Jim Culpepper, awesome name, awesome last name, Culpepper, said at least 200 people came through in the first hour. He said part of hosting the event was to invite people to visit the Legion to see what it's all about. The Post Falls American Legion offers a variety of activities and services for veterans and their families, as well as community events such as Sunday breakfast and, of course, its annual Thanksgiving meal. For more information, visit www.post143.org. The Post Falls American Legion holds a special place in my heart, folks. My grandfather, my late grandfather's plane collection is held there. Great cases. Shout out to all the folks there that maintain that place and keep it going. They do good work. They do good work. And the tank outside is cool. The M60 tank outside. Very cool. All right, moving on. Here Comes Christmas. This is by the Staff Press. Troy Nickerson directs the Travolta Christmas show, Best of Christmas, that opens this week. The Travolta. The Best of Christmas. That was a terrible Travolta impression. That was the worst. I'm not gonna worry about that. I'm just gonna delete that. I'm just gonna stop. I'm gonna write this timestamp down right now, and I'm gonna just edit that out. I'm gonna edit it out. It's not gonna make the final cut. There's no way. There's no way that that's gonna make the final cut. Troy Nickerson directs the Travolta Christmas show, Best of Christmas, that opens this week. But it's about more than fine-tuning the performances of a top-notch cast. Quote, "It truly is kind of my Christmas with family," he said. "In some ways, it's my whole Christmas season." Nickerson has no doubt that from the time the curtains open Friday to when it closes the Sunday before Christmas, the five actors will have delivered an unforgettable holiday gift to the community. Quote, "The more time I spend with them, I know we're putting something memorable together," he said. Ellen Travolta, sister Margaret Travolta, daughter Molly Allen, and friends Abby Crawford and Mark Cotter are bringing the Best of Christmas to the Coeur d'Alene Resort. Jenny Shotwell will be on piano and Eugene Jablonski on bass. The show premieres Friday and runs every Thursday to Sunday through December 18th. Quote, "It kicks off the season for a lot of people," Ellen said. This year's show, now in its 10th season, will feature stories, songs, bits, and letters that reflect Christmas memories and miracles, all packed into about 70 minutes. Some are based on personal experiences, while others came from the community. Ellen described it as a culmination of all things you love about Christmas. The Travolta Christmas show started as a cabaret and has become a treasured North Idaho tradition. Quote, "It's a wonderful, heartfelt family show, and I love all these people," Ellen said, looking at the team around her. "They're all great. They're real pros." Cotter, from Palm Springs, California, said it promises to be an intimate, energetic event of evening of songs and stories that will reflect a really happy Christmas. Which is no surprise. Quote, "I love Christmas," Cotter said. "As a matter of fact, my tree is up in Palm Springs already." Haha, that's funny. Crawford said being in the Best of Christmas is like being part of family. That sense of family is such that the audience begins to feel part of the show. Ellen loves sharing the stage with her mom and aunt and is proud to be a part of a show that many have said ushers in the holidays. Performances are at 7:30 p.m. Thursdays through to Saturdays and 5 p.m. on Sundays. The link for tickets is included in this, but it's just a kind of a jumble of letters and numbers, so I'm not going to read it because it'll sound weird. So if you're interested in that link, check out the story online. Moving on, Monday, November 21st headlines. Oh, my Guinness. I love that. This is a great story, folks. This is by Bill Bewley. Not surprised even in the least that Bill Bewley wrote this story. Crown and Thistle Pub has 14 taps and is coming up on selling its 500th different type of beer since Ben and Jennifer Drake opened it just over 3 years ago. It's such a cool place. But one beer is above the others. It has been since day one. It is, as owner Jennifer says, the godfather of beers. That's definitely true. Nothing, she says, beats a glass of Guinness. That's it, if it's correctly poured. And she guarantees that at Crown and Thistle, it will be. Quote, "It has been one of the best, most surprising things of my time at the pub, when Irishmen will come in and they'll watch us pour and they'll say, 'That's the first time I've seen a Guinness poured correctly in the United States. Thank you.'" See, there we go. All right, that's a little better than my Travolta impression. That's the Travolta impression, that's, you know, you can't, Oh my God. No, you see, that's off of South Park. Man, I'm mixing it all up today. It just makes me feel so good that we're taking the time and the effort to do it well because we love Guinness, Jennifer said. We've been Guinness drinkers for 20 years. You can always tell when somebody is actually making the extra effort to do it properly. People have been drinking it much longer. According to Guinness, the Irish dry stout was founded in a brewery owned by Arthur Guinness in Dublin, Ireland, in 1759. More than 10 million glasses of Guinness stout are consumed daily around the world, and 1.8 billion pints are sold every year, according to Guinness. Crown and Thistle is doing its part. In the past year, it has sold about 13,200 pints of Guinness. Some weeks, the pub goes through 4 or 5 kegs of it. That's crazy. More than 100 Idaho bars sell Guinness, but the Drakes said they were told that in the past year, they've sold more than any of them. That's impressive. Quote, we take our Guinness beer seriously, and we have since day one, Ben said. The pub at 107 North 4th Street is cozy, quaint, with original brick walls and wood floors. If it's atmosphere you want, Crown and Thistle has it. Jennifer, who designed the pub, said the name is a tribute to her favorite city and country, Crown for London and Thistle for Scotland. Most of the decorations are items she collected over the years. The bar is the centerpiece. Quote, every well-respected pub has a beautiful back bar, Jennifer said. Couldn't agree more. While they sell other Irish beers like Kilkenny, Harp, and Smithwick's, ooh, Smithwick's, very good, Guinness is the golden boy. Yeah, that makes sense. Crown and Thistle has a special tap handle and a tank for Guinness, and the owners pay attention to serving it right. Quote, it's one of the first things we teach anybody who works here, Ben said. Jennifer demonstrates, tilt the glass under the tap, pour to about 3/4 full, let it settle a minute or so, then push the tap back, not forward, to fill the top and let it settle again. Quote, the pour is incredibly important, Jennifer said. We'll not tolerate a poorly poured Guinness. Just picture just throwing it in the face of whoever poured it. Just do it again! The Drakes opened Crown and Thistle because they wanted a place to hang out and enjoy a beer with friends, which is what they do. You can often find them working right there alongside employees one minute, talking to customers the next, and sitting down for a Guinness before the night is over. Ah, well, they're Guinness lovers themselves, and they should know how to pour it. I've been here, been to the Crown and Thistle many times. Fantastic place. The Guinness is top-notch there. I think they even do the little gimmick during St. Patrick's Day where they'll get the laser engraver to put your face in the foam. That's pretty great. Moving on, Tuesday, November 22nd, headlines from Coeur d'Alene Press. City floats $500,000 dock project. City floats dock project. Man, we have some clever headlines today. This is by Bill Buehle. The Third Street mooring docks near Tumsill were built with wood and installed in 2000. Since, the city has spent close to $100,000 in repairs, about half of that in the past 5 years. For Parks Director Bill Greenwood, that's more than enough, and it's time to replace them. He said repair costs will continue to grow as the timber floats are rotted and waterlogged. Quote, they've seen better days, he said, Monday during a meeting of the General Services and Public Works Committee. Greenwood asked for and received permission from the Parks and Recreation Department to apply for a $350,000 state waterfront improvement fund grant to help pay for the $500,000 project. The new docks, if approved, will have a composite deck and steel frame with polystyrene floats and are estimated to last for 50 years. Very durable, Greenwood said. The mooring docks, about 30, are popular in the summer. Boat users pay $2 an hour or $25 a day to tie up boats there. They provide easy access to downtown, Tubbs Hill, McEwen Park, and the North Idaho Centennial Trail. The docks, quote, serve as a complement to the Coeur d'Alene Resort and to all the businesses in the area, according to a staff report. But the report said, quote, these docks were built with wood and have gone past the point where they can be repaired. The city would use $150,000 of its waterfront improvement fund, paid by boat launch fees, to provide the grant match dollars and to cover the remaining costs of the project. Both council members present, Woody McEvers and Dan Gookin, supported the grant application. If it is successful, the city hopes to have new docks in the next year. Well, that's good news. There we go. Moving on, people really care. This is by Bill Buehle. Monday morning, the final day of Operation Christmas Child in North Idaho, a senior citizen walked in the front doors of Anthem Church. She had seen the Operation Christmas Child sign and wanted to contribute, she explained. Out of breath but smiling, the woman handed over a single shoebox. She was so proud of it, said an Operation Christmas Child volunteer. It was that kind of effort that led to a record number of shoeboxes filled with items for children being donated this year. Quote, about 16,000, said volunteer Rod McCoy. At that, the small group of about 20 volunteers cheered as they gathered in the parking lot to pray over two trailers packed with shoeboxes, filled and ready to bring joy. While it fell short of the 22,000 goal, it topped last year's tally of nearly 14,000 and left everyone involved feeling good about sending gifts to children who have a little or nothing. They attributed the record-breaking year to growth in churches and a desire to help others. Kids emptied banks, high school students rallied to raise contributions, seniors spent savings, and churches helped packing parties. Quote, "We're tickled pink," said Jerry King, Operation Christmas Child North Idaho Area Team Administrator. National Collection Week, which ran from November 14th to the 21st, wrapped up Monday as the last of the shoeboxes from throughout North Idaho were delivered to the drop-off center at Atham Church in Hayden. The majority of shoeboxes filled with toys, school supplies, hygiene items, and a gospel message are bound for overseas countries. Since 1993, more than 198 million children in more than 170 countries and territories have received a shoebox through Operation Christmas Child, which is a ministry of Samaritan's Purse, a Christian organization. Many of those kids have never received a Christmas gift. Erica Otten said it's a huge boost for many kids who receive Operation Christmas Child shoebox when they realize that someone they don't even know brought them gifts. Quote, it's that amazing feeling that someone across the world cares for you, and it's amazing. She said, "It's an awesome cause, folks." Moving on, she brought light to everybody. Oh, this story hits a little bit right here, folks. This is by Devin Weeks. The joyful and brilliant light Julia Parman radiated into the world will be felt by her family, friends, and fans who see the Blazin' Divas perform Friday in the Coeur d'Alene Downtown Association's lighting ceremony parade. Quote, "I've been to almost every parade on Sherman since I was a small child," Ashley Schilling shared with the press. "My grandmother, Julia Parman, was always involved in some way." Parman, who founded the Blazin' Divas 13 years ago, died July 30th from a blood clot complication following a knee surgery. She was 66. Right to the end, Parman was working on choreography and details of the lighting ceremony parade. Quote, "She passed in the afternoon, but that morning she was on the phone with one of her practice leaders going through every element of this parade." Julia's husband of 44 years, John Parman, said Monday, "She's had this thing all dialed in, everything for the rest of the year." The Blazin' Divas is a creative and upbeat dance group wherein women of all abilities are invited to join in the camaraderie and exercise while performing for the Inland Northwest community and audiences around the country. Through song, dance, and costume, Julia was dedicated to giving people a reason to smile and giving her divas opportunities to sparkle in the spotlight. She even made special accommodations for divas with vision or hearing impairments and those with financial hardships so that everyone who wanted to could participate. Julia founded the Blazin' Divas in 2009. Quote, "Every year she organized and choreographed new performances to make each celebration better than the last," Schilling said. John, a quote, "diva dude," who is the group's producer, parade director, and communications chair, said special choreography to honor Julia has been incorporated into the Divas' Christmas parade routine. The Divas will take their lighted candy cane props and bring them to the center of the two rows to form an illuminated heart from the front all the way to the dancers in the back. The Divas and their support staff will also proudly wear photo buttons with Julia's picture to carry her and with them on the parade route. The lighting ceremony parade starts at 5 p.m. Friday at 8th Street and Sherman Avenue and travels along Sherman to the Coeur d'Alene Resort for the Countdown to Christmas and Holiday Lighting Ceremony. Folks, if you've been a long-time listener to the show, you know that I'm not a huge fan of parades. The Divas, though, are a small, bright spot in a parade. It's always kind of a new thing, and they're always so upbeat, and they're so fun. This is a good group. Always happy to see the Blazin' Divas, and that's a shame. Sorry to hear that, folks. Moving on, tax bills on the way. This is by Kay Thornbrew. Kootenai County property owners will soon receive their long-awaited 2022 tax bills. The bills will likely go out in the mail beginning Wednesday and will be mailed no later than November 28th. The treasurer's office will be closed on Friday. Many property owners who estimated their tax bills using the Idaho State Tax Commission's online calculator won't be in for any big surprises, said Kootenai County Treasurer Steve Matheson. County staff have compared estimates for dozens of properties, particularly residential ones, to the final bills. Quote, "They were all very close," he said. Some outliers are to be expected, however. Quote, "When we send out nearly 100,000 of them, I'm sure there will be a few that aren't quite close to the estimate," Matheson said. Those situations typically mean the estimates was calculated using some information such as an addition to a home that wasn't reflected in the county's records, Matheson said. Many property owners saw values skyrocket this year. For example, one single-family home in Coeur d'Alene with an assessed total market value of around $392,000 last year is now assessed at around $638,000, a 62% increase in 1 year. The tax bill for the home increased almost $400. More than 700 people appealed their value assessments in Kootenai County, a major increase over recent years. Rising property values don't necessarily translate to dramatic tax increases. That's because Idaho uses a levy-based tax system. In this system, taxing districts set their budgets, determining the revenue each district needs. The budgets of all taxing districts are totaled and then divided by the total sum of all property values in the boundaries of the taxing districts. That determines the levy rate. The levy rate is then applied to each property in the taxing district's area in order to calculate the individual tax charges for each property. When budgets increase, the levy rate also increases, causing property taxes to rise, but property values do not influence the levy rates. Property owners can view their tax bill information, access the 2022 levy rates, and pay their taxes via the treasurer's website. That website is www.kcgov, that's gov.us/509/treasurer. Now, if you're curious about that, go check it out now. Nobody likes paying taxes, but the bills are coming in, folks. Home of the lowest prices on all things outdoor since 1975, Black Sheep Sporting Goods is your one-stop shop for all your camping, fishing, hunting, and clothing needs. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check out Black Sheep's new location in the Silver Lake Mall. Be sure to grab an entry form from any cashier for Black Sheep's annual Big Game event. All Big Game entries must be harvested between August 31st and December 24th, 2022. Prizes will be awarded by random drawing. Size of rack doesn't determine a winner, and the entry must meet all state and federal laws. Black Sheep Sporting Goods, award-winning selection and customer service since 1975. All right, everybody, time to jump north to the Bonner County Daily Bee out of Sandpoint, starting with headlines from Saturday, November 19th. Headline, car crashes into Miller's store. This is by Daniel Radford. It wasn't the morning at Miller's Country Store that anyone expected. While a crisp, sunny Friday started out normally enough, it took a turn, or went straight to the usual about 9 a.m. when a client mistook their brake for the gas pedal and crashed through the east side of the building. Quote, things didn't go as planned this morning, store owner Lane Riffey posted on Facebook after the incident. Luckily, no one was injured in the incident and the structural integrity of the building was not compromised. Quote, if you're going to drive through a wall, I'd say that was the best one to do it to, Riffey told the Daily Bee while he and his men worked to patch the hole Friday afternoon. Had someone been standing at the counter, the situation could have been far worse, Riffey said. He thanked God for watching out for everybody. Riffey said that a few feet to the left or to the right, it would not have been the counter that stopped the vehicle. It would have been the King studs, which would support the entire building. Another support beam will likely have to be replaced. The lower portion was broken, and it's currently dangling from the rafters. Riffey said he had already spent about $400 on wood to patch the gaping hole. He estimated the total cost to repair the building would be at least $10,000. By 2 p.m., the cleanup and repair was well underway, with the wall completely patched. Miller's plans to reopen Monday morning, Riffey said. Folks, we'll have a little update on that toward the end of the headlines. Moving on, clothing line celebrates brain power. This is by Bo White Eagle. Education, empowerment, and encouraging others to command their futures. That's the premise behind a new clothing line launched by Bigger Brain LLC, a company founded earlier this year by Sage Sakamano. The Sandpoint High School graduate wants to spread the message that, quote, school is cool, and to not be ashamed of having a big brain. Graduating with the class of 2020, Sakamano is now studying chemistry at Bard College in upstate New York. It was there that Sakamano imagined and created her clothing line. Quote, with Bigger Brain, I aim to inspire generations to come that intelligence is not to be camouflaged. It should be proudly and positively wielded to improve our world, our communities, and our lives, she said. Recounting the awkward tribulations of high school, Sakamano said that she genuinely enjoyed learning and pursuing her education, but this came with a caveat. She said she often felt a need to hide her intelligence and love of learning. That all changed when she began attending Bard College. Sakamano said at Bard she found an environment full of like-minded people who shared her love of knowledge. knowledge and education. With the system of friends and peers, Sakamano said she was able to finally be herself entirely. This allowed her to make her interests and need the number one and her interests and needs the number one priority. However, starting a line of education empowering clothing wasn't in Sakamano's purview until earlier this year while visiting with friends. A joking comment, quote, "bigger brain energy can't even hold my own head up," unquote, became the catalyst. Like that. Thinking the comment was funny and should be on a shirt in a similar fashion to meme t-shirts, Sakamano said her gears immediately started turning. The college student said one of her best friends looked at her and told her that if anyone was going to do it, it would be her. Seeking out of other creatives in her school and enlisting her friends, Bigger Brain LLC was born from the imaginations of Bard College students. From the artists who created the designs, Lulu Kirmani, a studio arts major at Bard College, to the models, photographers, and videographers, all are students at the college. After 10 months of hard work, Sakamano launched the very first Bigger Brain collection called Smart in Style on Kickstarter. The crowdfunding platform allows every project to creator to set a funding goal and deadline. Using the platform, others who like the idea or want to support it can pledge money to make it happen. If the project reaches the funding goal, all those who became financial backers will be charged the pledge. However, if the funding goal falls short, no one is charged. With a breakdown of budget needs and an overhead cost, Sakamano set Bigger Brain's goal at $28,000 by December 31st. The campaign launched on November 11th with a party held in person and as an event on Instagram Live that shocked Sakamano. Since the launch, Sakamano said the line has already recorded $4,600 in sales. She is already looking to the future. Quote, "Something that I would put in a vision board for the brand is once we start making a profit, I really want to have a Bigger Brain scholarship drive or fund that the money from the fund, like a percentage of our own profits, will go into there along with people who can just donate directly to that fund will be directed toward low-income community students." In an effort to reach her funding goal and thus reach the long-term goals of Bigger Brain, Sakamano said that she has reached out to her alma mater, Sandpoint High School, Lake Ponderay School District, and many others in the local community. The response has been overwhelmingly positive. Friends, family, former teachers, and more are pledging, sharing, and talking about Sakamano's accomplishments. To learn more about Bigger Brain LLC or become a Kickstarter backer, go online to mybiggerbrain.com. All right, everybody, moving on. Sunday, November 20th headlines. Fires mostly out. Safety follows, this Pokemon Lobsinger. Except for the Kootenai River Complex in northern Boundary County, all fires in the Idaho Panhandle National Forest have contained, controlled, or out. However, that does not mean that the end of the fire activity nor crew work in the area of fires, INPF officials said in a press release. After a fire, loss of vegetation can expose soil to erosion, water runoff may increase, causing flooding, soil rock may move downstream and damage property or fill reservoirs, putting community water supplies and wildlife habitat at risk, they said. Priority is given to emergency stabilization efforts to prevent further damage to nearby property or national forest land. Although work cannot be performed on private landowners can benefit greatly when neighboring public lands are treated by burned area emergency response program efforts, officials said. Quote, "The stabilization work begins before the fire is out and may continue for up to a year," Joshua Baker, public information officer, said. In contrast, the long-term rehabilitation effort to repair damage caused by the fire starts after the fire is out and continues for several years. Rehabilitation focuses on the lands unlikely to recover naturally from wildland fire damage. BAER, B-A-E-R, programs are designed to address emergency stabilization through its key goals of protecting life, property, and critical natural and cultural resources, Baker said in a press release. Assessment teams assess burned areas to determine what efforts are needed and how to implement them in order to minimize threats to life and property resulting from the effects of a fire. BAER assessments are required when wildfires exceed 500 acres or a smaller wildfire when potential threats to human life and safety, property, or critical natural or cultural resources exist. Since it was sparked by lightning in mid-August, fires in the Kootenai River complex have burned an estimated 25,401 acres as of late October. Completion of tasks needed to reach containment was reached on October 28th. Minimal fire activity remains with some flanking, backing, and creeping. Roughly 9 fire personnel remain assigned to the fire when compatible land and resource management plans. Projects completed as part of the BAER assessment help substantially reduce risk within the first year following containment of a fire. While the Black Burn, Columbus, and Diamond Watch fires qualified for bear assessments, officials said the fires burned with overall low severity. As a result, few bear critical values are present. However, for the Kootenai River Complex, an initial bear assessment has been completed by a team consisting of soil scientists, hydrologists, engineers, fishery biologists, and a botanist. Treatments will include road closures, hazard signage, invasive species early detection rapid response treatments, stormproofing, and the construction of critical dips at high-risk stream crossings on Trout and Ball Creek roads. Those planning to travel in the KRC area are reminded that potential hazards exist and that crews conducting repair work may still be in the area. They are advised to travel with care and recreate responsibly, Baker said. For more information, visit the National Bear Program website, and these links are included in the story. Moving on, a giving team. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. Thanksgiving is a time of sharing and compassion, and thanks to the Bonner Community Food Bank, BNSF Railway, and Ames Construction, families in need in Sandpoint and the surrounding community will celebrate with a traditional turkey dinner. Bolstered by a $25,000 grant from the BNSF Railway Foundation and a $5,000 gift from the Ames Corp Construction, the Bonner Community Food Bank began distributing Thanksgiving meals Monday, November 14th. Volunteers from both companies were on hand to help distribute the dinners, made possible through donations not only from BNSF and Ames, but also other generous businesses, organizations, and individuals throughout the region. Quote, "We are grateful for all donations, especially during the holidays," Debbie Love, Food Bank Executive Director, said. "The contributions ensure families will enjoy a delicious traditional meal without worrying about how they will pay for it." BNSF Railway officials said the new bridge will help reduce congestion and move current and future freight traffic more efficiently. Quote, "We are committed to investing in the communities across the 32,500-mile, 28-state track network," Matt Jones, Director of Public Affairs for BNSF, said. Quote, "The citizens of Sandpoint and Bonner County went the extra mile while the new bridge was built, and we are thrilled to thank them with some Thanksgiving cheer." Community support, grants such as that received from the BNSF Railway Foundation, and the donations from Ames Construction are tremendously important to the food bank and its mission of helping those in the community who need their services. That decline followed heavy use of the food bank at the start of the pandemic, coupled with a sharp drop in volunteers. The combination prompted a change in operations, temporarily moving away from its in-store client choice market to distribution of boxes outside. However, the food bank has shifted back to its in-store client format. The Bonner Community Food Bank has been serving the local community since 1981. As of September 30th, they have distributed 360,539 pounds of food through donations from grocery stores and individuals. The food bank had over 24,000 visits in 2021 and is already over 28,000 as of the end of October of this year. To donate to the food bank, learn more about its services, or find out how to volunteer, go online to foodbank83864.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/ Bonner Community Food Bank. All right, moving on, folks. Tuesday, November 22nd headlines. Russell pleads guilty in murder case. This is by Daniel Radford. A Bonner County man has pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in connection with the slaying of David Milton Flaggett, 70, in September of 2021. Ah, our fine young cannibal. Well, 40's not too young, but... Just kidding, guys. He wasn't charged with cannibalism, but, you know, we all know. James David Russell, 40, entered the plea in exchange for the prosecution dropping a first-degree murder charge. Russell was also charged with cannibalism, but saw that charge drop in June, and the murder charge was dropped to the second degree November 15th. During a plea hearing Monday, when asked if he had been promised anything other than the murder charge being reduced in exchange for pleading guilty, Russell said he had been told by his attorney that he could possibly receive 5 years in prison and 5 years probation. Quote, "I like that," Russell told the court. "He could maybe have a normal life." Judge Barbara Buchanan asked Russell's attorney, Sean Walsh, about the comments, who replied that was, quote, "certainly not a promise." Miscommunication, I guess. Buchanan ordered pre-sentencing investigations before the sentencing hearing, which is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. January 30th, 2023 at the Bonner County Courthouse. Russell was arrested in September of 10th, 2021, after deputies were called to the Russell family property on Lower Mosquito Creek Road for a possible murder. There, deputies found Flaggett, groundskeeper for the property, unresponsive in the passenger seat of his truck. Seeing the deputies, Russell initially ran away and barricaded himself in the loft space of the garage building he resided in on the property. After a brief standoff, Russell was compliant with law enforcement's commands and allowed himself to be apprehended. According to court documents, Russell was unable to understand his Miranda rights after they were repeatedly read to him. Russell made only one statement to law enforcement in which he repeated more than twice, quote, "It's private property and we don't like non-family on it." Okay. Flaggett had several conflict-like run-ins with Russell and told the family about them, Bonner County Detective Philip Stella said in December 2021. Quote, "The family had enough warning signs that Mr. Russell was a danger to himself or others. He was found unfit to stand trial and was involuntarily committed to the Idaho Security Medical Program for treatment. The Idaho Security Medical Program is a subset of the Idaho Department of Corrections. While committed, detainees undergo intensive psychological and psychiatric treatment. After treatment, Russell was found fit for trial, setting the court process in motion. The court would find probable cause that Russell likely committed, quote, mayhem to Flaggett's body by, quote, depriving him of a member of his body or disfiguring or rendering parts of his body useless. However, the court did not find sufficient evidence to sustain a cannibalism charge." Oh boy. Okay. Well, that's glad he's in custody. That's all I'm going to say. Quote, "Sandpoint Junction connector opens to rail traffic." This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. BNSF Railway's second rail bridge is open for business. Completed nearly a year ahead of schedule, the Sandpoint Junction connector bridge across Lake Pend Oreille began seeing traffic Sunday, railroad officials said in a Monday press release. Quote, "We are excited about the benefits this second bridge brings, including reducing congestion and helping to move current rail traffic more efficiently," Matt Jones, Director of Public Affairs, said for BNSF. Quote, "Mostly, though, we are incredibly grateful to the residents of Sandpoint and the greater Bonner County area for their patience and support throughout the three-year construction of the new bridge. BNSF's main line meets up with Montana Rail Link at Sandpoint, previously creating a bottleneck where multiple tracks merged into a single track to cross Lake Pend Oreille. Construction of the second bridge, which runs parallel to the first, will allow trains to cross the lake in both directions," BNSF railway officials said. "Having the parallel bridges will eliminate the need for trains to wait their turn to cross the lake. As a result, BNSF officials said the flow of freight and passenger trains will be improved throughout the region. Quote, "The completion of the new rail bridge will also facilitate maintenance activities, including a modernization project on the original rail bridge," Jones said. Jones added that the existing bridge will be closed while crews perform the work, which is expected to be completed in mid-2023. Once improvements are finished, both bridges running parallel about 50 feet apart will be open for rail traffic. The completed bridge is 4,873 feet in length, comprised of 49 spans, 224 precast concrete girders, and 6 pile bends totaling approximately 55,000 feet of 36-inch pipe pile. The bridge has alternatively been welcomed and opposed in the community. Supporters of the project say it will facilitate commerce and reduce holdups at all grade railroad crossings in Bonner County. Opponents maintain it will increase the likelihood of hazardous material spills and derailments, in addition to exacerbating global climate changes through added fossil fuel consumption. BNSF railway officials said previously that Sandpoint Junction connector went through a significant permitting process with multiple opportunities for public comment. A, quote, "robust and comprehensive review for the project was conducted with more than a year of studies supporting its construction. Environmental protection was built into the project," BNSF railway officials said. Among them, BNSF planned to use bubble curtains to reduce sound pressure impacts to bull trout. Interesting. The second bridge was designed to have fewer piers than the existing bridge and would align properly approximately with every other pier of existing bridge, thereby minimizing the amount of underwater structures. BNSF Railway operates approximately 32,500 route miles of track in 28 states and also operates in 3 Canadian provinces. For more information, visit keepsandpointrolling.com. That's keepsandpointrolling.com. Oh, very cool. I'll have to keep an eye out when I head out that direction again. Need to see this bridge. Moving on, Miller's Country Store reopens. See, I told you we'd get back to it. This is by Daniel Radford. You'd never know walking into Miller's Country Store on Monday that just a few days prior there was a vehicle inside the Sandpoint business. While things did not go as planned on Friday morning, they did on Monday morning. The store reopened on schedule Monday after closing Friday morning to repair the damage caused when a car crashed through the front of the building. Miller's Country Store owner Lane Riffey said no one was injured and the structural integrity of the building was not compromised as the vehicle narrowly missed two King studs. The driver allegedly mistook the brake for the gas and was stopped by the counter in the store. Riffey said Monday that a beam that was dangling from the rafters has been replaced. In addition, electrical for the front desk, which ran through the beam and that was ripped loose, has also been replaced. He estimates repairs currently total a couple thousand dollars. The framing, wall, and insulation have all been patched. Ruffy said that they are just waiting on metal, windows, and rock for the outside of the store. The windows are about 6 weeks out from arrival. Well, good. Glad to hear that they're recovering from that real quick, too. Real quick and surprisingly cheap. You know, you expect everything nowadays to be so expensive. So sounds good. Good news to end on. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com. All right, folks, let's wrap up the show with some news coming out of Shoshone County. Shoshone News Press headlines, rather, coming from Tuesday, November 22nd. Headline, A Sense of Comfort. This is by Josh McDonald. Developing coping skills is one of the most important ways that human beings adjust to the increasingly stressful world that we exist in. This is doubly important for children, who often find themselves in situations where their stress manifests itself into feelings of helplessness, anger, or sadness. It can also cause them to feel restless, and when a child feels restless, with no available outlets for their energy, it can lead to disruptive behavior. At Silver Hills Elementary School, a newly designed space is now available for the students to go and gather themselves while allowing them the opportunity to express these feelings or even let some out of that pent-up energy. With the backing of Mountain West Bank, Silver Hills Elementary School Special Education Department created a new sensory room that students are free to use when the situation calls for it. A sensory room is a specially designed room that combines a range of stimuli to help individuals develop and engage their senses. These include lights, colors, sounds, and sensory soft play resources, all used within a safe environment that allows the person to explore and interact without a risk. Becca Johnson is the community relations manager with Mountain West Bank, and one of the primary goals that she has any time a branch opens and operates within a community is to see how the children of that community are being served and what can be done to improve it. Quote, we could see these rooms help children, teachers, and therapy staff, Johnson said. To kids, this just looks like fun, and to adults, it's a way of working therapy into real-life lessons, like learning how to regulate emotions, kids getting an opportunity to get their wiggles out or regroup in the Zen Den helps them to have more class time with less interruptions. Along with teachers Amber Wood and Erica Hunter, Johnson went hunting for a space, which is generally the first roadblock that has to be overcome when it comes to getting a sensory room installed at a facility. Silver Hills Elementary has such a room prior, but as enrollment numbers increase, that room is converted back into a classroom. Quote, finding the space these days is the tricky part. Everywhere we look, schools are crowded. Silver Hills was taking their old sensory space and converting it into a classroom, so we needed to find an alternative, which happened to be an old storage space off of the gym, Johnson said. What began as a plain gray cinder block room is now a magical ocean-themed space where kids can come and take part in a myriad of activities. One of the cooler features of the space is a converted closet right off from the room that houses the Zen Den, a blacked-out room complete with fiber-optic lighting, and a big beanbag chair where a child can lay beneath a weighted blanket and listen to calming music and let go of their stresses and anxiety. Quote, bringing the fiber optics and glow-in-the-dark pieces is fun even for adults, Johnson said. I think it's honestly probably better for adults. Who doesn't want to sit in the Zen Den with a bubble tube humming and the fiber pulsing through the ceiling? But sometimes a grant can turn a wish into something bigger than just a sensory room. Sometimes it feels like we are making magic. Countless hours went into converting the room, and Johnson was very clear that the staff from Silver Hills Elementary went above and beyond to get the room ready for the school year. Johnson credits Mountain West Bank's local branch manager, Gina Dorschel, for much of the project's success, due largely in part to her knowledge of the community that she passionately serves. Dorschel is proud of the efforts and results from the time and money spent making this happen. Quote, as far as myself and my team, it's our job to find the needs of our communities. Let Becca know about them, and then she gets the ball rolling, Dorschel said. Well, awesome. That is super cool. I mean, I'm sure kids will enjoy it, but man, I certainly wouldn't mind sitting in a room. I certainly didn't have these back when I was in school. That's for sure. You got to sit on a wall and think about your life while you watched other kids play. Yeah, I'm totally over it. Totally over it. moving on, last story for the day. Snack Pack Program seeks community support. This is also by Josh McDonald. It's a hard pill to swallow, but the fact remains that countless children rely on schools for their daily food. Often that means a child only receives breakfast and lunch. That meal is provided by the school Monday through Friday. The Silver Valley Snack Pack program aims to prevent that, but it needs to support the support of its community. The Snack Pack program sends food home to those students in need each week to fill the gaps when the child isn't in care of the school. Organizer Christy Jacobs has been busy with her fellow group members to ensure that their shelves are stocked and that no students ever experience having an empty tummy and not being able to rectify it. Each month, the group meets to fill bags up in preparation for the weekends for the students at Pinehurst and Canyon Elementary Schools. This year, Jacobs anticipates that they will distribute roughly 600 bags of food per month to 150 students, and that's just at Pinehurst. With food costs going up, each bag costs roughly $4.50 to $5. Multiply that by 600, and suddenly you're looking down the barrel of a $3,000 a month tab in order to feed these students, a far cry from the 800 students per month they were able to feed when the program began. The food is bagged up and then discreetly distributed to the students on Fridays, and all of the food that is sent home is easy to prepare and can be eaten as well. The Snack Pack program recently opened a food pantry at Kellogg Middle School to serve some of their older students as well. Older elementary-age students can also receive food for their younger-than-school-age siblings. Funding has been the major hurdle for the nonprofit group. Operating solely on the word of mouth, donations, and a smaller fundraiser, Jacobs is fully aware that to maintain the current levels of food supply, it's going to take more dollars. Quote, "We know how to shop smart to get the most out of our money while still making sure that we're getting good foods for the kids," Jacob said, "but we don't want to start something that we have to pull in February because we ran out of food and money." End quote. Food donations are accepted, but Jacobs and co. prefer money so that they can buy in bulk and distribute the same foods evenly throughout. For more information on how to get involved with the Silver Valley Snack Pack program, visit its Facebook page. If you would like to donate to the program, please contact Christy Jacobs at 208-640-6542. Or by email at cjacobs, that's C as in Charlie, J-A-C-O-B-S, at rlmsilvervallely.com. Well, once again, we'd like to thank Hecla Mining Company for sponsoring this episode. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in to the show. We really appreciate it. Hope you guys are enjoying it. Hope you guys are getting some information. Hope you're having some laughs along the way. Whatever the case may be, whatever brings you back, happy to do it. Happy that you're here. We appreciate your listenership. Once again, please subscribe to the North Idaho Now podcast on whatever podcatcher that you listen in on or music app. We are on Spotify, Player FM, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, whatever your choice may be. We are most likely on it. So just search us out, North Idaho Now podcast. Find us, follow us, subscribe to us, get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonenewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or the bonnersferryherald.com. Also, a quick shout out for the Coeur d'Alene Press. They're currently doing a photo submission drive right now, trying to get photos of North Idaho Thanksgiving. If that sounds like a kind of a nebulous, ominous category, that's because it is. We want your photos of anything you think that perfectly encapsulates Thanksgiving in North Idaho. That could be turkeys in your backyard to a Thanksgiving dinner, decorations, leaves, anything that you think encapsulates the holiday here in our communities. If you have a photo like that, or if you're planning on sending that in, just jump on over to the Coeur d'Alene Press's app. You can download that through any Play Store or anything like that. Find us and then go to photo submissions and just send that on in. More information on the photo submissions can be found on the Coeur d'Alene Press Facebook page. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll see you after Thanksgiving. Goodbye.